as I would like to say back in the old days.
Now, I'm just saying, you know, you're in tune with your buddy, with your co-host, when you both make the same mistake as to what day of the week it is.
Yeah, it took my wife to ask me if I was off tomorrow, thinking tomorrow is obviously Friday, for me to realize that today is not Wednesday, it is Thursday, and that it is the 10 p.m., 20 minutes before the show is supposed to start.
There you go. Like, yeah. So we scrambled, and that's what we do.
You were available.
I'm glad. And we had talked about, like, well, maybe we should go out, get something to eat, something like that. And I'm glad that we were like, you know what? Not tonight. We got to get Lex to bed on time. We've got daylight savings coming up. Oh, you know, we'll just camp out in, like, we managed to stick the landing. Hey, everybody, welcome to a tech podcast where two old guys can't remember what day of the week it is. Because all the days just blur together when you're having this much fun with new gadgets.
Yes, actually, well, no, technically, yeah, we are. There's a lot of interesting things that have happened and things that have come off of embargo and things that we're actually able to talk about.
Well, and especially we've been living in some of these things a bit more and getting to follow up on it too. So
yeah, and I think we're finally getting into, at least from my perspective, I feel like March may end up being that little bit more of that calmness before the storm, a little bit. As January, February has been like, you know, not the norm, not what expected. And now finally, you know, MWC's over. We're kind of calming down. You know, we have the Nothing Phone 2A that came out. You have another nice little gadget there that you got that we're going to talk about as well. I'm making videos on Mars themed keyboard that look just like, absolutely look like they fit into Star Wars, but they're not Star Wars. They're Mars. Like, seriously, that absolute kick ass.
It's the fun stuff to talk about. And we've got a great crew already in this chat. I'm seeing Body Yee. I'm seeing Simon Says Hypno, Bionic Scoop, John Gao, Simon calling us out. That newfangled technology they call calendars. Fake nerds. He burned us and then he twisted the knife. It was like,
I don't know what calendars are. I'm subscribed to many, many, many old tabloids. Like
newsletters.
Where
newsletters,
fancy stuff. I like to just etch all my events, especially weekly events that I typically.
I've moved on to cuneiform. I don't see why you're holding on to that old, like, scratchy tech. You got to go to clay tablets. That's how this stuff really gets done.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was Etch-a-Sketch, but yeah, sure, we could do that. I mean,
you shake it and it gets all weird. Nah, you could, like, just take it back.
That's how you get them off. No, but I mean, so seriously, we've been doing this for quite some time. You're right. I mean, you think we would remember. I'm not going to say this is the first time that's happened to us. I'll be very honest with you guys.
Yeah.
We've had this happen a few times.
But usually it's like one of us catches the other. This is like, man, we were not only both in sync.
It was just like,
if it hadn't been for your wife saying something, we just wouldn't have done a show tonight.
It would have been this. We would have basically gone to sleep, whatever, woke up next morning thinking, okay, great, so you got to do the show, whatever, and we'll see all these notes of like, what happened to the show, where are what's
going on, guys?
be it as it has been a somewhat of an interesting, weird week for me, because timing and day, and like, I'm finally over the jet lag, but I'm getting back into, you know, day job stuff, whole bunch of that. And then we had that quick storm flood warning that just kind of passed through us today. A lot of weird weather going on, but finally we're back into somewhat, hopefully starting tomorrow, we're going to have sun for the next few weeks, a couple of weeks.
My videos LA weather could really use, Juan who can go outside again would be nice. Well,
yeah, or where most of your camera tests are not just gray images of the sky. But.
So I've got like nighttime photo and video samples to finish out because I'm almost done with the Vivo X100 Pro camera.
Oh, I don't think I'll ever be done with that phone. That phone is just
it's like 4,500 words on how much I love this phone. But so many of my nighttime shots,
a love letter to the X100 Pro.
It kind of is. I mean, I have some things that I think I'm critical about. Some things that I think Vivo definitely needs to work on. But like, I'm starting to put tags in my videos where my B-roll was shot from, and lately it's all been Vivo. but like, so many of those nighttime samples are like torrential downpour. Because I had no other weather to, I had no other time to do it. I had to go out in a raincoat, and it looks really cool and romantic, but it was not fun shooting and getting all soggy for that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. I mean, and just to, for reference, the 90% of, no, all of the B-roll on the Mars, other than the top-down camera, like when a normal A and B camera type of thing, on the keyboard, on the Mars 3 keyboard from Keys Me, was actually shot with the X100 Pro. It's that level of photography that you're going
for. I can get better macro photos and videos from my Micro Four Thirds cameras. It takes me so much longer to get a slightly better macro image than just pulling out that Vivo. Sometimes most of the time I don't even need to set up like an additional light. I just hold it and I crop in and then I've got the shot and I go and put it in the video. It is so fast working.
It has, it handles, and I think you've said this in the past, I totally agree with, it handles low light better, in my opinion, than the Find X7 Ultra right now.
Yeah.
The Find X7 Ultra is getting pretty good. They actually just pushed out the last update. They pushed out on it. We now actually have on device object eraser for the Find X7 Ultra.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So it actually is nice. Like, you know, Oppo's finally pushing out AI, functional AI. And it actually is scary good. Like it's pixel scary, maybe even better than pixel scary good.
Nice. Like we need that on the OnePlus because the OnePlus's AI tools are a little rudimentary.
There's some rumors. I don't know if somebody can confirm for us, but I think the N3 is finally getting or started to get Android 14 or ColorOS 14 in the Asian markets. So we are at the cusp of getting a lot more functional options, and I'm really excited for the Open, because for me, I still use this device. It's not like I just suddenly left it. It is by far to this day my favorite foldable combination. I'll say that there has been other devices, like we have the Porsche design that we have from from Honor, that may have maybe better mechanics, maybe the dynamic, the physics of it are maybe better, I'd say better looking. But I'll say the combination of function, software implementation, performance, the Open is not, it cannot be beat right now.
It's a real good little tablet.
It's cameras.
It's pretty smart.
The cameras. It's the fact that I can pull out that phone and take a picture with it and realize how well this camera stack that we have in here and all of the optimizations that we get from Oppo. So
it's been real good times. I'm turning to OnePlus and OnePlus 12 in the Open. I don't feel like I'm missing as much. Like in years past, I remember especially how much I loved that year with the Google Pixel 4, the Pixel 4 XL.
Oh, yes.
And that was a strong year for LG. That was a strong year for Samsung. Like, it was a really, really strong year all around.
And
I was using...
I don't know where it is, but yeah.
Was it the OnePlus 7T? I felt like I was missing out not picking up my Pixel. The OnePlus 7T was a phenomenal bargain, great high-performance device, but there were little things. I'm feeling that a lot less with this current flavor of OnePlus. Mm-hmm. And if I leave the house with just a OnePlus 12 or just a OnePlus Open, I'm not... I get a few more spam calls, but I don't feel I'm like missing other capabilities or missing a functional camera where I'm not gonna. The Discord has its own little like kind of private chat. I'm sorry, not the Discord, the Patreon. The Patreon has its own sort of Discord private chat, and just we got a ray of sunshine. So I took a shot of this field that's kind of outside our neighborhood, just on the edge of our neighborhood. And people were like, oh, what phone shot that? Was that a Xiaomi Ultra? Was that like a Vivo X100? Oh, that's such a great photo. And it was a OnePlus 12. It's just OnePlus is really filling themselves right now. They are doing the good stuff. So the competition side of this has been absolutely wonderful over the last couple of years. And I feel like there's a little momentum in the tech enthusiasm scene where we're starting to tell that story a little bit better for, I mean, for the people who care about these things. And yeah, Look at that. This is brilliant. This is gorgeous.
The clouds kind of broke in, and suddenly there was that open space where the sun was shining on the clouds, but not directly onto the ground. So you got that lit, that darker area, and then you had that nice little gorgeous opening in there. And I literally, like, this is a, like, you grab the phone, you take the picture with it, and you realize, like, crap, this is a legit camera system. There is no compromise on the cameras when we're getting a foldable, and it's a kick-ass foldable. So it's like, it really just, I just want to get more options in that, so with Android 14. So yeah, it is refreshing.
So if Oppo wants to give us some of those Oppo features in our OnePluses, I'm sure no one would mind, but we don't want to get too bogged down in all of that. Cause for us not having a show prepared, we do have things to talk about. I feel like we should lead off. Normally, I would say let's save it to the end and really drag it out so people have to stick with the show. But really, everybody has opinions on Nothing Phone 2A.
Yes.
I think, like, that's probably where we should go to chat about nothing.
Let's just.
It's a show about nothing.
It is. It's much to do about nothing. That's what it was called. I think that was the
much to do.
Much to do about nothing.
Much to do about taming shrews and CMF new neckbands. That's, I think, what Shakespeare wrote.
I think that's exactly what Shakespeare wrote. I heard today my son called out that Bohemian Rhapsody was written by Beethoven. And I looked at him straight on and I said, "You're telling me Freddie Mercury's first name is Beethoven? Beethoven von Freddie Mercury?"
I feel our kids will have an easy time messing with us just by wait a minute. Were you alive before Google? Are you old? And then we'll have to
Yeah, especially when you're like, you know, you're born in the 1900s, back in my day, you know.
No. Oh, that's gross. Don't say it like that. That's awful.
You know, Etch-a-Sketch was discovered and announced and launched. I remember having to walk into snow to get one. No, but anyways.
Uphill both ways. And I guess I have spent literally tens of minutes with Nothing phones.
Okay.
I have not lived with one. I have not spent any significant time with one. I've played with them. They seem pretty neat. But to me, they seem built around a design and a design aesthetic, which kind of runs counter to what I hope the future of mobility will be. So
they're very much banking on that unique look. I'll say that it's really built on,
I think that's cool.
How do you know, like, an iPhone is an iPhone, but obviously for that design never changes.
Really, I'm not saying they don't look cool. They definitely look cool. And I came from hosting at Newegg, where we were putting systems together with real pretty RGBs. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I get it.
Yeah.
I still miss, like, every now and then I bring it out of retirement. My Razer phone too had RGB icons on the back. We've had gaming phones with lights in their cases.
ROG still makes, to a certain degree, kind of like RGB stuff, but, like, you know,
they watered it down a little, but
they're taming it. Yeah. They're trying to go more. I feel like they're almost trying to go a little more legit, right? Like, they're like, we're trying to appeal a little bit to more sophisticated gamer as opposed to the me in the middle of a Call of Duty game where I just want lights to be flickering all over the place because apparently I want to cause a seizure to myself. I've had an experience with all three of their phones. Although I'll say that the first one I didn't spend a lot of time with. I imported out of I think in the UK or Paris. Mm-hmm. We talked about it on the show a long time ago. I paid basically I bought it off Amazon and it got delivered within like 4 days. I was like, crazy.
Yeah, that was really cool. I thought that was really cool that it got
at the time
so
that
quick.
Phone wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't released in the U.S. And then phone 2 did have a U.S. launch, and that was actually so that just not that I say I was prepared or anything like that. I do have the phone 2 with me as well. Where the 2A really, it's kind of a weird way of doing it, right? Okay, so we have 1, we have 2, and then we have the 2A, and where the 2A kind of fits, it fits in between the 1 and the 2. It doesn't fit after. It's not an upgrade to the 2, but it's technically an upgrade to the 1 that was out a couple of years ago. So if you size it up from that experience, it's really more considered to be I'll say the more budget friendly version of their devices, because the Nothing Phone 2 still runs it's a flagship processor, right? I mean, be it not the first, the current generation, it still is a flagship processor on a device.
Yeah.
Where the 2A is trying to take over that, you know, the 7200 Pro, it's a Dimensity, it's a mid-range processor. The experience on the device is pretty much shaped around that. But then it also comes at $350. So it's not really, it's hard to fault it for the things that it has and what the things that are not there. But it also...
I like that as an A series phone, it's a 2A.
Yeah.
It is doing that thing that... I think we need to see more of, putting that pressure on Google and Samsung, where I feel like Samsung and Apple are most vulnerable.
Exactly.
Imagine spending $350 on a phone and then thinking, oh, you know what I should do, though, because I need blue text messages, is spend $50 more than this and get an iPhone SE with 64 gigs of storage.
That's what I
need to do. Because I don't want to look like I'm broke with an Android that is better in every single conceivable way.
Every single possible. Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And my just experience with this is an interesting experience. I'll say the experience on here, there's a few things that I commend them. There's a couple of things. Again, if you're a fan of the Glyph interface and you like the light up effect on the back, this is absolutely going to work for you. The 2A obviously is a direct competitor to the 7A from Pixel, to the A series from Samsung. So we don't want to, you know, misconstrue and think that this is it's going to be a competitor to the Pros, to the Ultras and all of that. It's not trying to, but I'll say the things that I do like about it, I'll say is form factor. They stuck to the design. They're not changing it heavily. They changed the camera setup. Kind of looks more like a Minion, Bob's face, eyes.
Yeah, it's cute.
I've seen a whole bunch of it, which is fine. Perfectly fine. I would have.
I mean, it looks like to me like something out of WALL-E, right?
A little bit.
Looks like one of the robots. Not Ava. It's not that clean and sophisticated.
But it
does look like one of the robots that would clean up on the spaceship in WALL-E.
For a general experience with the device, though, honestly, it actually runs and it functions very nicely. The Nothing OS 2.5 is actually pretty well. It has come along quite a bit. For the price that it's coming from, it has 12 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of internal storage. That's also very, very nice. Stereo speakers, flat display. A lot of people love that. 120 hertz refresh rate. Support for always on display with custom lock screen. The cameras are okay. I'm not going to say that they're going to be the best cameras, but we have to also.
But it's $350
again. Yeah, so we need to expect because we
do,
always
do
have
you
to
know. Understand. Do you know what sensors they've got in there?
No, I never got the
Oh don't worry about it.
No. Yeah. Sorry. The JN1 and the GN1, they're both. Sorry, take that back. I do have the specs.
If it's got a GN1.
It's a JN1, so it's a 50JN9. My mistake. It's the primary is a 50JN9, and the secondary is the ultra wide is a 50JN1. So both Samsung sensors. Oh, right there.
Not bad.
Main sensor with OIS and EIS. Surprisingly, audio recording with the camera when I was recording video, even with the ultrawide, was actually pretty good. Audio processing was very clean and isolated my voice very clean. I didn't do any post-processing in the clip that I used. So I typically let the phone do its thing. It's not bad. I mean, honestly, I'll say the lack of a telephoto is a little bit... Like it's harder to forget about it because we always want to be able to get closer to the subject, and the 2X that we have here obviously just a sensor crop, but it's not you start losing some of the quality the more you
use. But I think it's fair because I think a lot of companies are looking at things like how can you offer up say an iPhone 15 style experience, and this is offering up an iPhone 15 experience. Minus some of the higher end graphics performance for half the price of what an iPhone 15
again for the $350 price point.
If Apple can sell a really expensive phone without a telephoto sensor on it, And we're making a compromise here in terms of overall compute power, and it also doesn't have a telephoto sensor on it, then I feel like they've made a reasonable they've made a reasonable decision for where they're positioning this phone against more larger competitors like Apple and Samsung. I feel like that's fine. I'm glad that this doesn't have a triple camera.
I was about
with
to
like
say.
A two megapixel macro.
I'm so happy there is no filler sensors in here. We do not need to have that quadruple stack in the back. And
I will pay more to have fewer sensors that are actually usable.
I am with you. I am look. I think the trend is starting to get some steam or some momentum. We're seeing more, but again, for what they have, and when you start comparing it to the original Nothing Phone 1, which, again, to be true, never came to the U.S. market, and this one is technically is available in the U.S. market, and I say technically because there's a little bit of a hoop you have to jump through to be able to get it in the U.S. Internationally, in India and in Europe, I think it's available readily. You can pick it up. There's three different color variants, white, milk, and then black. And
cool.
In the U.S., we have, again, 12 gigs of RAM on something that is that for that price point, 256, again, which is the right amount of storage to start with. So I feel like with the way with what we have and the fact that we have a larger battery, 45-watt charging, now no charger in the box, but again, still 45-watt charging in there, it's a compelling device to recommend. It's hard to knock it when you're considering, like I say, a 7A that it will cost more and you don't get as much. Again, 256 gigs of storage at 350. There is a thing to be said where we get the 7A that's not even there. So I think right now the way they're doing it, I think Nothing is trying to feel the market in the US for a device in this price point because they launched the 2. They know exactly that there's some demand. There are some people that are interested in it. But the 2A is right now in more of a development stage. So you need to be part of the development program to be able to purchase one. And I mean, essentially, it's just you're providing feedback every once in a while where they're not asking you to develop for it. But it's not that hard to get. And once you get it, you won't be disappointed. And it just, again, it's a solidly built device. It's not the same heavy material that we get with the 2. They're definitely gone with more plastic build, so on. Again, there are some there are some tailoring that's been done here. But it's an easy recommendation for me because of what it does and what it does well. And I think Nothing's been doing really good in basically building up the experience. The Glyph for me, I'll be very honest with you. There's a few things that I found after using the 2 that I found that are functional for me. The always-on virtualizer, that kind of dies away right away because it's cute for the first
It's just two times. A novelty. And then you're like, okay,
absolutely.
Cool.
The two things that I really like about them are the Uber connection that they have built into this, where you have a kind of like a countdown timer to where the Uber driver is going to be next to you. So if you're holding the phone, you don't have to keep it on all the time. That was absolutely functional. The other one is timers, which kind of coincides with it. But you can set a timer, put the phone down, and the timer actually has like a nice little countdown effect on the back. So about those two and maybe the visual, there's the Glyph where you're able to use it as a fill light. Kind of like how we got it with the Vivo V30 Pro. It works a little bit in that effect. Although I feel like this one is better because it surrounds the camera stack. So the fill light comes from around where with the Vivo, we had it positioned like under the cameras. I'm saying it's a bad decision. I'm saying that overall, it works for that advantage. And then I don't think you won't be disappointed. I honestly don't think this is a good recommendation. I like it. I think it's a good option. On the website, it shows that there's two colors, but my understanding is that only the black one is available. But I think they're just showing us the options available in the that potentially maybe in the future we'll see it. So
Because internationally, like going to the Nothing site, you start with 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of storage. But increasingly, it's like anything I can do to at least nudge people to consider 128, not enough. We got Marie the Pixel 8. Not the 7A. We ended up going with the 8. It's great. She's really enjoying her new phone. And she enjoys that it's her phone, not one of my old review phones. Like, she bought it, unboxed it, set it up, put on the screen protector, chose the case, everything. So it's her phone. And she really likes the pink. Actually, I really do like the pink on that Pixel 8. But even for her, we were like, 128, not enough. You've got a precocious little daughter. You need 256. And I will not have you shooting terrible 1080p video of my kid. You actually do need to shoot good video, so you got to step it up.
We have to, yeah. I mean, I think the weird thing is, I think we're stuck in a position where, like, I think, yeah, eight gigs of RAM, you got to think of, so here's the thing. With more years of support being touted by companies, you need to think about the device where it is in the future. So if you're buying it for future use, for long-term use, you need to be able to have that. You know, we don't have expandable storage. We don't have removable storage. Internal storage has to start with a good capacity. And I feel like you're right. 256 is, it's a good starting point. I think for some of the stuff that you and I do, especially for the devices that we live in, 512 maybe even a good, I'd argue to say 512.
256 is already getting lean. It's so crazy.
Like, I came back from MWC, dude, and I had like literally about almost 80 gigs of footage. Yeah. And videos and clips, because you're like, you're snapping your and you never have to, you don't want to run out of, like, I was a couple of days ago, I was rendering a couple of videos on my on the Mac, because I was doing it during my lunch hour, and my render times were running really slow. Like, the Mac wasn't running well. I forgot that I only had 1 terabyte of storage on that PC, and I was running low. So the lower the storage capacity, your system starts running low. Even your smartphones suffer from this. So again, plan for the future. I think if I could go back in time, probably should have gone for the 2 terabyte option. Because typically, although I have external drives, I don't really connect them all the time. Yeah. Without RAM or whatever. I don't like dongle heaven. I just want the PC to do its thing.
I am thinking, I might spring for one of those 2 terabyte Steam Deck drives for my Robo Ancala. I don't edit video on that, and yet still, I want as much storage on that thing as I possibly can. So I might be making the bump there.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, for me,
sure,
my reluctance to jump on a nothing, I see a lot of aesthetic. I see a lot of interesting brand conversations, but at the end of so many of my videos, I am the hardware guy. What wants to see, you know, like, really pushing into like more aggressive territory, or trying to do something a bit more price disruptive.
Yeah.
And I like that nothing has a vibe, but that doesn't change much of anything to me compared to some of the Pocos that I've used and some of the Realme's. And
even internationally, there's a lot more
Infinix that's coming. You know, like, that could be again, depending on what region you live in, that could be a really cost effective way to get just a really good daily driver phone. Mm-hmm. Probably not as nice as the Nothing Phone 2A, but also probably cheaper than the Nothing Phone 2A.
Infinix is surprisingly, their ability to hit lower has surprised me every single time I get a device from them. I don't understand how they're doing it. I understand, obviously, it's the marketing, and you could see the tailoring, but they have so many aesthetically well-designed devices. Oh, and, you know, like the Zero series. I think I even saw one that had I think at MWC, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was one that changes colors. Like, it has almost like LED panel on the back. So it is absolutely really nice to see what Infinix is doing, what Tecno is doing. But in the US market, when we start talking about competition, realistically right now, OnePlus and Nothing are about the only two other competition. And we'll take that back. And Moto, of course. Moto is still in the conversation. Obviously they're still releasing devices every year. We still have options. It's still early in the year. But it's a smaller competition. Internationally, I think the 2A has a lot more conversations around, does this make sense against, let's say, a Poco X6 Pro or an F5 or some of the other options that we have access to. You're right. No, I do appreciate what we're seeing in the market. It's, for me, it was, when I first heard that they weren't releasing it directly and it's through the developer program, I had maybe some questions that popped up in my mind, like, why is it being done in this manner? Is it that you just don't trust it? Because to me, it's more like, you're still selling it in the US. That extra step for the developer, is it more?
But I feel like this is a part of the showmanship of the people who are running this company that is not dissimilar from the early days of OnePlus, where it was a lottery system
to get the
phone. And I get that that works. I get that having like an in-group and an out-group helps build that kind of buzz and helps kind of kickstart that kind of community. But it's that kind of fashion decision. And I'm not faulting anyone who really wants to be a part of a movement like that. And that's your vibe. Mm-hmm. For me, that kind of fashion decision usually turns me off more than gets me excited to try and participate to try and figure out, oh, what's this new thing? I want to be hip to it. Cause kids still say things like, I want to be hip to that, yo. So, again, for me, it's like, I love sort of all the exposed paneling look. The
channel, but yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I know what little momentum we built up on this YouTube channel is gone. To be fair, that probably happened a while ago. but like for some of the design choices, I think they're kind of cool. Really mm-hmm. robot-y, really droidy. The glyph stuff is fun in a yep. way that functionally I have actively tried to keep my... The phone that has my SIM card in it, I tried to keep out of sight as aggressively as I can, and I turned to other gatekeepers, like a smartwatch,
yeah.
to know whether or not I actually need to pick up my phone. So I don't care about always-on displays, because I have an always-worn display is my gatekeeper, and I don't want my phone pulling my focus from the stuff that I'm working on. I'm already too hyper-distracted throughout my day. The perks of something like Glyph, the functional aspect of something like Glyph, is already something that I've been actively working against. So we come down to, well, it's a really good phone at a really good price, and you're like, that's cool.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I get it. I like the decisions. Two camera sensors instead of a third useless camera sensor. Sure, mm-hmm. I'm with you on all of this, except this is one of the most brutally competitive fields internationally. In the like $300 to $400 space, where you have so many good choices for higher performance or better cameras or just more entertainment multimedia features. Like for this phone to stand out, I'm not sure what it is that it offers, except for the aesthetic choices. And so then that's what I would recommend to someone who wants kind of a fashion phone. But I'm not that guy. I can't really comment on it. I'm not good at it, and I don't know how to comment on that. The closest I can get is saying, I really like what some of the Vivo stuff does, because those phones are sort of pretty. And then you just have to take that for whatever it's worth. And I think that's the end of our interaction right there.
Like I said, the glyph interface is the unique part, but I feel like it grows you... I'm not saying it's not functional. There are many things that they've done into it, the improvements that they've done over the time, the composers built into now, and some of their old Easter eggs that they brought in. It is cool. It mm-hmm. has some function into it, but you're right. It depends on your lifestyle and what your usage of the device is. The functions or getting things to be functional on the back of the device makes it so that you're really going to be thinking that you're always going to have the phone with you on hand, and you're basically putting it on a table and you're always looking on the back of it. That's the interaction that we're getting with the Glyph. But you're right. After some time, you kind of forget about it. It stops being the main attracting effect, the attracting factor to this. The see-through design, I think, on the back is what I really like about it. That whole kind of like the D-Brand's, you know, naked skin that they mm-hmm. were doing for a while. I like that. I like the fact that we can see the ribbons. I like the fact that we can see the camera array arrangement at the top. That is a unique look they did with the Nothing Phone 2.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely great. So from those, if you kind of keep that in mind and understand and also appreciate that they've done a lot of good software development, although the updates are not going to be as fast as what we typically see with other companies. This is one thing that nothing needs to start.
I thought they were saying quarterly? The frequency. Is that what?
Well, but that's, yeah.
I think that's fine. I mean, some good friends of ours who also do podcasting on Android-y things were talking about the Pixel feature drop. And in mm-hmm. part of their conversation, it really sounded like they thought like Pixel feature drops were every month. And you're that's not how that works.
Yeah.
And I kind of need people to sort of expand.
The last one was December.
Yeah. Again, if we're paying attention. That's an easy trap to not fall in. It's like a really clearly marked and indicated big warning sign danger trap to just avoid. But the thing I really feel like techies need to adjust their expectations on, sure, Samsung has done a really good job of holding on to like 4 and 5 years of updates. Mm-hmm. On a lot of these phones, though, you start getting into the 4th and 5th year, well, they start shifting from every other month to quarterly, and then they shift from quarterly to, if you've got a Galaxy A series, to just half year updates. So you got 5 years of updates, but the time in between started getting longer and longer and longer, depending on the popularity and profitability of that phone, how well it sold, how many people they need to support. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, again, another part of that expectation needs to be tempered. So you can go out there and say, you're going to get 10 years of software, but after year 3, you're only going to get one update a year. Is that really the thing we think we're buying? Is that really the promise that we're making with that manufacturer? I don't think a lot of people would say yes. I think they have this idea of monthly or every 6 weeks or every 2 months or something like that.
You'd expect them to be more frequent. I think what I was trying to lead in with, though, is for the market, because it's hard for us to, I mean, internationally, there, like I said, there's many, many things that could be talked about and cases to be made. Time will tell how well it performs. I think the price is very competitive for the Indian market. I feel like that's really where that's actually where they had their launch event. The only physical launch event for this device was in India. The UK side, I think, will have a good following. Some people will find it appealing. Some people may not find that the design is even their style, right? I mean, it's more prominent of the see-through design when you go into the white and the milk color, where on the darker one, it's a little bit harder to tell. Like, you can kind of see it a little bit because I'm hitting it in the light right now. But like, otherwise, it almost looks like it's a gray backing. They've tried doing the integration with Tesla. They've tried to do the AirPod controls. You're right. Like, the brand collaboration that they're trying to put into the device. I think Carl's trying to just bring in a lot of the mystique, I want to say, that he was able to cultivate and build with Pete back in the days with OnePlus over here. Mm-hmm. And some of it is working. I think there's still some steam going on. The developer option, though, in the U.S., I would have liked it to be more of a straight sale. Like, don't get me wrong. I think it makes sense for them.
I think we all would.
Build the community.
For sure.
But I feel like that may end up working the other way, because it's not an invite. It's, you just sign up for it, wait to get approved, and then you can buy the device. It's, you know what I mean? It's like a different. Yeah. Once you get it, I think you're not going to be disappointed for what you're paying for it, what you're getting there. I think nothing has a good deal on it. We'll have to
see. I'm never going to talk down getting more competition. And also getting more interesting things to talk about as we cross over into proper mid-range.
Yeah.
It's, and especially seeing that we can, it's not seamless, but we can get this here in the United States. We are starved for all of those really fun Neos and Vivo Vs and Pocos and Realme's and Redmi's. We don't get any of that.
Or Honors or any other device. Literally right now we have a very small pool of competition. Moto's been doing pretty well.
It can't all be on the OnePlus 12R. We need to shake it up a little bit more than that. So I'm never gonna.
I feel like it's really more of a baby flagship. I can't really. It's hard for me to look at the 12R and I mean, other than the camera experience that we're getting there,
right?
Performance wise. Yeah, and especially when it gets down to the
but I mean, like, think about it. If you go and spend $350 on a nothing phone 2A, mm-hmm. you're $50 off from a phone with an 8 Gen 2. I mean, like, that's a tough fight. The OnePlus 12R is a tough fight for anyone right now.
Yeah.
But the $50 difference is so precious. Like, I really have to struggle to think, who could I recommend a phone to where that $50 jump is going to be completely undoable? Like, they just can't, they can't do it at all. They can't save it up. They can't wait an extra week. It's just, they have to get the phone. $350 is this hard stop. So this is the phone that they're going to get. It's just such a crazy place that we find ourselves in, because right now, I feel a lot of Android mid-rangers are functional without a clear identity. And nothing is trying to create this really aesthetic identity.
Yeah.
But think about how many devices over years. We've been playing in this mid-ranger space since the Snapdragon 730s. In this middle tier performance, you know, it does these things really well. They're still roughly as powerful as Snapdragon 835s and 845s. Like, we have been hovering here for like 4 or 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And the Nothing Phone 2A definitely contributes to a competitive landscape. It definitely does some fun things. But, man, do we have so many devices. And older flagships. You can go with the 2-year-old flagship, get yourself a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, and you would be in for a really good time. Like these new mid-rangers.
One of my only reasons why I kind of like feel like that the R series, the 12R is, or the Ace 3 internationally, where it's known more so as, is a compelling device for what it offers. You're right, though. It is going to be a hard sell to try to recommend one over the other. I think there's a certain, like I said, there is that mystique that Nothing is trying to put together. They're trying to captivate some of that effect from back in the day. And I think overall, what they're getting right now is, if we take that out of the conversation, their products are getting better as time goes on. And I like that they're improving software, improving functionality, more collaborations. Again, there's more of that name pulling into the experience in there. I'm glad that they have an A series, honestly, between you and me, because the direction of the number series has always been towards flagship. That's always been, I mean, they started off with a mid-range processor. The Nothing Phone 1, I think, was the 7 series. I think the 788G or something like that. I don't have my numbers on me here. Sorry, it's just the record, because the video was posted not that long ago, my notes are on are still on my desk. I think it's a decision based on design. I think the design's pretty much going to get you through the door. You're right. Sure. If you don't like the design, it's a buy or skip kind of a conversation. If you don't like the design, you're going to skip it. You're not even going to give it a second thought. If you like the design, the 350 may get you in and get you comfortable with the price point from a device that runs Android, that has very specific schemes, themes, icons, collaborations. Things that they still need to work on, like the Tesla integration. I think that's something they still need to work on. Yeah. But other things like, I'll say this. In the video, I kind of show, I love always showing the headset there, the earbuds. Their audio solutions have been kick-ass. They've done stellar in the buds.
I can't wait until they put up. Nothing will finally have some of my money, because they just announced that neckband that's going to be like $30 or $40. And I want another neckband.
They even have a smartwatch in India, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't care about that.
Yeah.
After the OnePlus Buds, the OnePlus Bullets, I've been wanting to see what they could do with like another neckband, and there are so few to recommend.
Not that many companies have been releasing.
So if you give me a noise canceling neckband for like $40 and it doesn't sound like complete garbage, well, I will sell a lot of those $40 neckbands for you. So we got a couple comments here real quick before we move on. Sure. There are so many choices for a mid-range phone. I never thought the $300 to $600 segment would be saturated, which, I mean, truer words, Septian, because you not only have the pressure of all the new devices, you also have like last year's mid-rangers are still completely competitive. You have 2-year-old premium phones that now are looking like really solid buys. Michael Peppertech saying you could get a renewed Pixel 7 Pro on Amazon for $359 or a Pixel 7 for $279.99. Okay. And you'd still be in for 3 good years of software support.
The 7 Pro is solid. It's a solid device.
Michael Corcoran saying slick deals. There were people that were able to get the 12R for as low as $330. And I'm saying, like, I bet you the Nothing Phone 2A performs better for the ultra wide and for macro shots.
Yes.
Because the 12Rs macro solution is pants on head.
12R is a one camera solution in the back.
It's a one camera phone. Occasionally you want to take like a panorama, but you don't want to move your phone. So that's when you use the ultra wide and it's just okay. But for $330 going down to a 1.3 camera solution, like it's a camera and a third. Yeah. I feel a lot of people would say like, okay, that's a pretty good buy for a stonking powerful, device. I think the
Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 will perform better as well. You get 4K capabilities.
Oh yeah.
4K 60.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say is Septian is also asking, I'm curious what that MediaTek can do. And the 7200 is a very good chip.
No, it is.
Designed to go head to head against older 7 series from Qualcomm.
I feel like more 7200. Of the 7 Gen 1, not even the 7 Gen. It's closer to more of the 778.
I mean, you're right. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like right on the boundary between the 778 and like stepping up into the 7 Gens.
Yeah. Well, just the first, 7 Gen 1, because the Gen 2 and the Gen 3 have leaped a little bit, quite a bit. Like we've seen a lot
Qualcomm
more.
Qualcomm is still all over the place. I feel like 7 Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3. They don't.
And there was like the 7S Gen 2, which kind of.
Yeah, they don't linearly improve. They are just sort of all still in a mid pack. And some of them not tremendously displacing the 778 or the 765. So you've got a glut of Samsung chips. I mean, sorry, not Samsung, Qualcomm chips in that mid space. And at least, like, the dimensities are a little cleaner. Like, they're a little easier to understand after you got rid of the 1000 and 1200 series.
I think, yeah.
Then everything's a lot clearer with dimensities moving forward.
I agree. And we're moving into a 4 nanometer as opposed to the 6 nanometer that we had before. There's a lot of things that are being done there. General usage, I think the 7200 Pro runs very well. Where I feel like it struggles a little bit is with image processing. Like you take the image and if you can jump straight into the actual preview, you actually have to wait 2 to 3 seconds for it to finish processing that.
Oh, you'll see it.
You snap a few. Oh, you better give it a few seconds. This is definitely 7 series.
It's
challenged.
That's a part of, if you follow me on Patreon where I test a whole bunch of real world apps in my performance reviews, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. Older Dimensity chipsets often struggle with file compression. Don't know what it is, but if you take a big video file, like a high bitrate audio file, and you trim it down and you make the video shorter, if you render that video out at a really high bitrate, Dimensities crush. They'll outpace pixels sometimes. But if you take a high bitrate video and you try and squish that bitrate, boy, how do they slow way down when you start using that, when you start trying to implement that kind of data compression. Yeah. Happens with JPEGs. If you shoot a RAW and you batch process a bunch of RAW files, you're going to be in for a bit more of a wait. And literally firing up an app like RAR file compression, the scores are so much lower. Everything else about the chipset can be even better than what Qualcomm delivers. But for some reason, older Dimensities still have this little quirk where if you need to squish a file, it seems to take longer. And that's exactly part of the issue that you run into. You've got a stack of DNGs. You're applying all of this HDR processing. Then you've got to squish it down to a JPEG. And you're going to watch that happen in your photo app, in your photo gallery. It's going to take its time because one of those issues.
They're trying to do some of the Google XDR image processing and try to get the brightness, the boost color boost in there. Some of that shows in there. But one thing I do also want to mention, surprisingly, which I wasn't sure why, I didn't think that the 7200 Pro needed to run in a throttled mode. But I think the processor generally doesn't run at full at a high performance. I ran a couple of benchmarks, one with and without the game mode turned on, and it was a substantial difference in performance, at least according to Geekbench 6. So we're talking from the 600s to the 1100. That's the shift. Usually,
almost like twice. Yeah,
like it's quite a bit tamed down when it's running in general mode. Which I feel like it should have. That could also be something they could fix later on in the future to increase the clock speed, improve the performance. I mean, again, the software and the version of the hardware that we're talking about is I've had access before launch, before availability to the general public. There is some time for them to be able to help. At least I know the 7200 can perform better because when I was playing games and I had it in game mode on, it ran really good. It actually. It stepped up to what I expect from a mid-range 7 series that I've recommended before because so my son has we've used the F5 from Poco. It's a 7 Gen 2, if I'm not mistaken, as far as it's a 7 series. And it runs really good. It runs all of his games.
Runs really well.
Mid-rangers are no slouches if they're managed correctly. I feel like this is, again, partially part of the software thing. It's just that I feel like the discrepancy between standard mode and performance mode is almost double. And that tells me it's a governor issue. That thing's just not managing it.
But I also think that goes to show how few people are going to notice. I hate saying, but average people aren't blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it's the same thing. Like how critical we've been of Samsung in years past. Like you get a phone, it's in like low power mode. It's a 1080p display, even though the screen supports 1440. I mean, like everything they can to tune down.
To say why they do that, they give you a so they're giving you.
But they advertise so heavy all of these amazing high performance features, and then they kind of know there's a certain block of consumers that will never notice.
Oh, that
their phone out of the box was completely throttled down.
Yeah,
this also does kind of help though if the Nothing Phone 2A is running a mid-ranger Dimensity 7200. And it's governing that 7200 to roughly hit like half of its potential CPU performance. How little compute power you really need on a day-to-day taking calls, surfing social media, taking a few snapshots of your lunch for Instagram.
So this is standard mode. And
so like that is like Snapdragon 845 territory up to Snapdragon 865 territory.
It's a big jump. We're almost talking 50% jump from 600 to 1100. So to me, I feel like I'll say this. I think that the gap is too great. They have some space to move up. We're talking about a 1080p panel. We're talking about a 5,000 milliampere battery, 7200 Pro. Not a very high demanding ecosystem for the battery not to last. You would still get a solid day and a half worth of usage with that. So, but again, keep in mind of the only reason why it kind of got to me because as I was testing the camera and I was going out and I would take multiple shots as I'm trying to compose and make sure I'm getting the subject in focus, I would automatically jump into preview. That's just like the natural thing I do. And having to wait has kind of put me into the, okay, I got to wait. Don't take too many shots at the same time. You know, like you have to tame it. That's and then fair. When I run the benchmarks, I'm like, oh,
wait well, that explains a minute. Why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to put the camera in game mode. Maybe I don't even know if I can, but I like the fact that they do have a game launcher. That's also something that was nice. You could see the FPS in there. You can record video. There's some little things that they've done. I think, like I said, aesthetically, it's there. It's good that they're going into the A series. I'll say that they're creating the portfolio. We're seeing the 2A now. Obviously, the 3 may come out at some point. We'll have to see.
I really hope they can kind of settle on a true direct North American launch strategy, and I'll be more excited just to have the competitive option.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I think it's fair to say there is really nothing for me here with the Nothing, but I want to be. Yeah, I know it's so dumb. It's the worst pun because we keep like
we need to have.
You
that
know, that's what they wanted us to do was to make fun of their name. But I will enjoy having something that I can point other people to. Like, for example, my mom is finally considering leaving her OnePlus 6T.
Yes,
she's seriously scoping the OnePlus 12R.
I think the 12R would be an amazing jump. I think especially because of her coming from the 6T series, it has been like light years of improvement. We're talking pre Oppo, pre color, pre Oxygen OS as it stands right now, pre a whole bunch of stuff like charging speed alone. Let's just say that charging speed alone will win this. You get the much bigger 5500 battery. It is going to be amazing. I can't wait.
It's just piece by piece. So many of my family members have gone Pixel, but my mom is still saying, like, I want to, I mean, I've had these great experiences with my OnePlus. I think she kind of enjoys no one knows what her phone is. And she's like told these stories of like, they sound like bad, like who's on first kinds of sketches.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this woman at my quilting club was asking me about my phone, and I said, well, it's a OnePlus. And she was like, yeah, but what is that? And I said, it was a OnePlus. She goes, oh, but I mean, that's not an iPhone. And she's like, plus no, what? It's not an iPhone. It's a OnePlus. She's like, oh, so is that like a Samsung? And she's like, no, it's not like it's a OnePlus. And she's like not helping them at all, but she is answering, like maliciously complying, answering the question exactly. So I feel like she is exactly that kind of contrarian. But also, just she genuinely has had amazing experiences with this one phone lasting as long as it has. So, again, it's that little thing that you can point to. Do you want something unique? Do you want something that stands as like a talking piece? It's a conversation starter. Yeah. You pull out your phone and it's an Honor 8. How many people stopped you and asked you about what case do you have on your iPhone? What is that thing? Like that can feel good.
That color is an iconic Honor blue color, which Honor sadly, so sadly, no longer makes them. Like I want them to bring that color back.
I need the
Chevron V.
It's another one of those phones. You know, like we talk about some of our favorite classic phones. Who I would need to kill, and whether or not you wanted me to make it look like an accident, or if you wanted me to send a message. But if you could just deliver exactly the Honor 8 again, but with a really good mid-ranger chip for 2024, I'd even take the same cameras. Give me, just make it exactly the same, but just spruce it up and call it like an anniversary edition.
Yeah, I have that
so sweet
being here somewhere. And I think there's a white color that I had, which was I got it through the UK. We were doing some development on. And then there's the blue one that we got from when they launched it in the US. It was the only time you and I actually went to an Honor launch in the US.
I did find my Honor Magic 4 though. I need to get a SIM card in there and get it updated again, because that was a really pretty phone to revisit.
Yeah,
but
pretty phone.
I feel like I don't get it. I feel like it's not a phone for me. But I feel like a lot of people are excited about this, and I'm happy to see some competition. So
what this does. And again, looking forward to hopefully getting out of the developer part of it and just making it just general sales, making it available on Amazon. Again, for the price, the function, the uniqueness, it's definitely a conversation starter. If nothing else, you're holding that phone, you get a call, and your phone lights up in that effect, and you're like, wait a minute.
Ooh.
You will get called.
That did something different.
Yeah.
Like, go on.
Yeah, that is like, yeah, you're important. And then, yeah, no.
You know. Some people's phones light up. I mean, that's a thing.
Imagine your mom having the same conversation. So what phone is this? It's nothing. No, really. What is it, though? Is it an iPhone?
It's nothing. It's nothing.
It's nothing. It's just, don't worry about it.
Nah, don't worry about it.
It's a nothing. Okay?
You know what? I should tell her about it. I think she's going to stick with the OnePlus. And also, there are some other reasons why. I mean, this is what I love about my mom is like, oh, I don't, you know, really have, you know, a lot of high needs, and I'm not gaming or anything like that. But you start peppering her with things like, I actually think the OnePlus 11 has slightly better cameras, but the OnePlus 12 had the brighter screen. Oh, well, I definitely want to go with the brighter screen. I mean, it's so funny when you can kind of like, you talk to someone who's not a techie, but if you like position features against them, they have opinions. They are so much techier than they think they are.
Things that matter the most, really. Those little those little aesthetic features a brighter
because
panel.
I know people who would be like, oh yeah, I don't care so much about that, but oh, if you say this has the better cameras, I really would want to do that. And so again, is like my mom's like usability matrix just instantly put things against each other, and she's like, no, F that, I want that. So like, we're okay, I think the 12R is probably going to be the right fit for you then. But again, I just think it's
Genshin Impact or non-Genshin Impact 12R. That will be the discussion for a different episode.
I don't think I need to expose my mom to like purple? Like an anime babe. You know, like, let me, why this phone is purple is because of this game, and you just run around looking at this anime butt fighting monsters and stuff. So that's why people like this game so much, I guess. Because I'm totally taking us on a tangent.
Please.
I had to give it a try because I'm a huge Transformers nut.
Okay.
No, screw Genshin Impact. I'm diverting this. I'm going off on a legit tangent.
You were leading me down that direction.
No.
You're like, hold on.
No, I wasn't. I just wasn't doing a good job. No, I suck at this. Okay.
Please.
So I tried Transformers Forged to Fight. It was a microtransaction laden game on Android, on Google Play, and then it got removed from the Google Play Store, and then it came back on Netflix. Okay. So now there are no microtransactions. But it's still the same grind fest. And so it's like you put up a group of Transformers, and then you walk this path, and you fight other Transformers, and you get materials, and then those materials upgrade your Transformers, and they get more powerful. And it's one of those, like, it's like a fighting game, but really rudimentary swipe and tap controls on the screen. There is no controller support, so it's never going to be precise. And it does the same hook. I started playing with a few Transformers, and you know, your progress launches really, really quickly. And then you get to this middle point where, oh, I've actually got to save some material if I want to upgrade this Transformer. So let me kind of pad this out. And now I'm getting into some of the end game where I'm getting like the top tier, like the most powerful, but it takes so much more material to upgrade and to get them into fighting shape that like I've hit a brick wall. In the original version of the game, well, you just spend some money and you can bypass some of those, but now without me being able to spend money, I just got to grind. And let me tell you, this game does not have enough to make you want to grind. So anytime now I kind of start dabbling with a game and I start getting that feeling like it's going to do that. Mm-hmm. It's really fun to start. And then you can still have some fun in the mid game, but I really am the kind of guy who wants to get to the good, fun, powerful end game stuff. And the game is going to deny me that. Either through
it was adapted from a different pay. It was built with a different mindset of a user. And when it didn't have as much sales, now it's under Netflix. They didn't really redesign it. They just took out the pay mechanic. It's a tough one.
And that's even worse because I probably would have kicked the money just to see, like, okay, let me get a couple 5-star Transformers. Let me get I really want to get a Galvatron. Let's do this. Let me see what it's like. And then maybe I still would have walked away, but I did burn quite a bit of money on Marvel Future Fight back in the day when we started getting into Tier 2 and Tier 3. So yeah, just anymore, I can't. And I know why people like Genshin, and I know story, and there's this exploration, and it's a really fun fantasy combat kind of world, but not my gig. Not Honkai, not Genshin. I'd rather go back and just play Chrono Trigger over and over and over again. Because Chrono Trigger is amazing.
Did you ever get a chance to see the OnePlus? I forget which one it was. Was it the 10T? Or they did a Cyberpunk 2077 theme.
Yeah.
So I love custom design devices. Sure. So
I do too. I liked the Samsung Batman Edition phone. Who was it? The Red Magic did an Autobot. Did Optimus Prime.
What was it, Optimus or Bumblebee?
Oh no, they did a Bumblebee too, but they did an Optimus Prime in China, and it was everything I could do to not import an Optimus Prime Red Magic.
Speaking of import, I think at this point I'm really eyeing that 14 Ultra, but that's a different conversation for a different day.
Yeah, I'm struggling not to spend a ton of money on that.
Well, no, not only that, our buddy Jermaine, concept creator, kind of pointed out, which I totally missed initially, the Chinese edition version of the phone has a specialized, it's actually better battery tech than the global one that the launch event that I went to. I didn't realize that the ceramic one had, I think, a larger battery and different battery tech that may help provide better, longer battery life on the device, obviously, but I didn't get to dive into too much. But I don't want to segue too much into 14 Ultra. Obviously, the device is, we don't have the device. Vive la 14. This is what I will say. The overall, I think one thing I definitely don't want to take too long, but again, nothing's doing great. I think OnePlus is doing really good in the US. I think we're a lot of good things in there. But I heard, or I think you and I were talking earlier this before we started the show, you were showing me something that it was very unique that looked like I didn't get a good look at it. And is it a phone or was it a power bank? Is it though?
No. I don't think we should call it a phone.
It's a tank.
It's just real big. It's a tank. Well, how many times have we overused all of the big animal adjectives? Like, it's a beast. It's a kaiju of a phone. It's a monster. And then this comes out, and it's ludicrously impractical to use as any kind of consistent daily communications device. This is the Unihertz 8849 Tank 3 Pro.
Oh, it is a tank. Okay, I'm sorry.
It is called a tank.
Built like a tank. Yes.
It's got everything we've ever thought about putting into a phone. It's like if you took an old Moto and you got all the Moto mods, and then you glued them all together, minus the Moto Mod game controller.
Of course.
That's what you would kind of have here, is a phone with a 24,000 milliamp hour battery, 120 watt charging, and it took me over 2 hours to charge it from empty to full at 120 watts. 23,800 milliamp hour battery. So I'm just rounding up. It's roughly 24,000 milliamps. So it's not 24 amp hour battery.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, 120 watt charging, USB-C, IP68, mil spec. I think it's 810H. Someone's probably going to have to correct me on that.
Okay.
But even with IP68, because it has this laser DLP projector top.
Okay.
With an IR blaster, by the way. This is because a little IR blaster. You can use it as a universal remote, but it has this projector. The projector needs to be cooled. So it has a fan, and it's still submergible.
Crap.
It is IP68. So it also has this port cover, and you pull open the port cover, And it's got a little headphone jack next to the USB-C, but it also has these crazy powerful like vibration motors to help you get water out of the device if you submerge it.
Exactly.
But it's still water resistant. There's a quad camera on the back, three normal cameras with a fourth IR camera.
It does
infrared photos and videos, and it's got like a regular LED for the flash, and then it also has, you can see this little quartet of infrared lights. Okay. So what's funny is it crazy overexposes the IR shots, because you've got a concentration of four IR lights blasting your subject whenever, unless the subject is like far away and the lights can't see it anyway. It is completely hilariously audacious in every way. It is hard to hold and carry and use. I was taking photos with it and I was crouched, and I went to just move it to one hand, and I didn't have a great grip on it, and it fell on my shoe and it hurt my foot. I charged it up to 66% yesterday, and I've been like using it all day, and it's down to 61% today. It's silly.
Some type of Helio processor or
Dimensity 8200.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So it's more powerful than a Snapdragon 865, better performance per watt than a Snapdragon 865. The hilarious thing is it also has like a whole bunch of like customizable buttons and stuff.
Why not at this point?
So you were over there like, oh, well, glyph interface, and you need glyphs and stuff like that because you're such a nothing shell. But
totals.
I can turn on a Hyper Bright. I don't know if it'll...
Of our audience. Guys, just as heads up, the sun is about to turn on.
So the entire back panel here is a lantern series of LEDs. This has a Hyper Bright mode that you can only turn on for short bursts, and then you can't turn it on until you let everything cool down for at least 10 minutes. Yeah. I don't know why, because this is already ridiculously bright. Okay. But in case you need a short burst of even more brightness, you can do that.
2 seconds. Yeah, like, why not?
Oh, it warns you when you turn this on. I'm turning on the LEDs. Don't look directly at the back of your phone. And then you get into silly, like, you know, you were talking about glyphs. We can also do... They have like a whole panel, their own tools, for the hardware and different things. And like you can do things like, oh, I could use this as like a level, or I can hang pictures, I can measure height and distance.
It seems
but maybe
with that type of like a, it just feels like with the size of it and the way it's built, it's a multi-purpose tool. Like especially when you talked about the IR camera.
Oh, it's a Swiss Army knife.
No.
But maybe in your Swiss Army knife, you also needed like police lights. You could have glyph. I guess glyph is cool, but I could walk up on the scene and be like, hello, fellow officers. I, too, am policeman. You can tell by the back of my phone that does the flashing of the lights.
It's a standard issue police device. I just picked it up yesterday with the brand new lights. Yes.
I'm just warning people in the general vicinity that there could be a law enforcement incident happening.
Does the phone stick to the top of the car and you just drive with that, or the old Hutch back in the day, like, you know, put up the light bulb, put it up, you know, like
now I gotta turn this off, hold on.
All joking aside, obviously Unihertz is known for building, especially with the Tank, there's the Mini, there's a whole bunch of different series of devices. I haven't reviewed any of their devices in the past. I found it interesting, at least the fact that it has a projector built into it. Obviously, it's a short distance projector intended more for, like, you know, enjoying content by yourself on an area that's closer. But the fact that they're including so many, like the lights, the cameras, the sensors, the camera, the 8200 though. I was expecting you were going to say like a Helio G95 or something. Typically, that's what I've seen in the past.
Like an old Kyocera. I think the last Kyocera I got to review before they sort of stopped making phones altogether was had a Snapdragon 4 Gen 1, which is a functional make calls and pull up an app on your phone kind of processor and not much else.
Yeah, it's very much, especially when you try to put it on a smart device and try to do some of the smart functions and displays and all that other stuff. I think, look, the Unihertz makes very unique devices and they're purposely built and they're usually supported by campaigns and so on. So people purposely buy these in early stages. So some people may find it useful to have a like Swiss Army knife of smartphones, but it seems like it's actually pretty decently equipped to be able to handle processing and actually just functional phone things. I'm assuming you haven't started the camera experience yet and some of that stuff. So we'll have to save some
very
of that.
Rudimentary, but it's like the cameras are functional and they're not terrible for stills. There is currently like no image stabilization on the video.
Okay.
Some of it is not great. But again, what we're talking about here is not a phone in any traditional sense. Like I had a friend, her name was Katie. And she built up a huge chunk of her career talking about like wildlife conservation. And she did this really audacious road trip. She lived in a van for like almost 2 years. She kind of built up a lot of her social media following. Like companies would reach out to her like, hey, you're doing van life. Let's send you some solar panels, or let's have you talk about this battery, or let's have you like talk about water purification systems. And she's this avid rock climber. She's really, really cool. And she kind of built that into also like consulting on like political wildlife and conservation kinds of things too. This to me is the computing communication gadget that I would have given her for those stretches where she knew she was going to be like driving out in the desert.
Yeah.
Tons of battery life. Maybe she doesn't want to have a TV running off of her battery, but she could still project a movie onto a large canvas and have like a nice entertainment experience that way. I mean, it's not the phone you just casually take with you to Starbucks. You really don't want to, and it's going to rip open the pockets on your jeans because it's so big and sharp cornered and heavy.
Yeah.
But like, if there's like an idea of rugged, I'm the nerd who was like recently showing off how much I love like my big chunky rugged laptop. Well, here's a phone that's even thicker than my big chunky rugged
laptop. You got the matching pair, bruh. Come on. You got the matching pair.
My daughter comes in. She's like, that's not a phone, but that's funny because you have RoboCop's lunchbox and now you have a phone to match. And you're like, you're the sassiest little 8-year-old I ever did see. But
I
need to try and get the projector. But, you know, I always think it's, oh, come on, YouTube, stop being stupid. Because, like, the rotation keeps throwing it off. And I just want you to stick. Just stay. Put, God, I hate the YouTube app. I should have done this in a browser. Does are you going to stay? Or are you going to
just do screen mirroring for the projector?
Yeah. So now it's because I wanted to do, and then don't.
I hear the fan. So now I'll like, say that the fan kicked up.
God, this is so dumb. Why won't you stay in place? Stop doing screen rotation. Stop doing this is YouTube. This is not the tank. The tank is actually doing what I want it to do, and YouTube is being stupid because what I'm trying to do is like that scene in every movie. I was just watching The Rock, and they're hacking in The Rock, and like you can see
the Matrix.
I'm like totally looking at this computer monitor. Hold on,
I'm coding. I'm
totally right looking at my computer monitor, but. But really what they've done to this poor actor is project an image onto their face because it's supposed to be the reflection of their computer monitor on their skin.
This is Juan coding right now. He's hacking as we're speaking right now. He's doing it live. He's working on the tank. He is the tank. No, but you got it really set up correctly. Like it goes under the cap and it goes straight into your face. So I'm like, all I can think of is like, yeah, okay, dude's doing it legit. Okay, I get it.
So at some point, this will probably show up in a video just of me making fun of other people that have done stuff. Like, I'm totally watching this movie, and what they do is they have a projector, like, blasting them in the face. So,
yeah, no.
Now I have a mini projector that can do that.
Oh, man. It's a very interesting device. I'll say that much. and I say that Unihertz has been known for doing a lot of that. Even some of their keyboard solutions, like they're keeping the BlackBerry theme type of keyboard on a device moving forward, at least keep going on in this one.
to help me hack.
Yeah.
Halle Berry's going to jump in. It's going to be great.
It is. It will be one of those really cool shows. For me, I think I'll say this. I mean, this week we're going to try to keep it a little bit pretty much kind of tight around that 1.5 hours. I think there's not a lot of things kind of going on. We have a couple of more. I have one more video that I'm going to be posting before the weekend is over, and that's going to be on the Xiaomi Watch S3, the ring the ring watch. That's what I can say.
Hey, fancy ring watch.
It's an interchangeable design. like you could change the look of your watch by just changing the ring on the watch. So if it was a better way to say it, if I can figure out, oh, here it is. I think I had it on sideways. And the effect that I got from it when I first saw it at MWC was, this is actually ingenious. You can make the watch or the pickle.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I think I put the, oh, no, I did put it in right. Did I put it on? Okay, here it is.
You got that ring going?
The ring is on correctly. Yeah, there's a, Woo. It's kind of like a camera ring where you have to match the dots to put it on. And I didn't see the dog, but you could put it on wrong somehow. And I don't want to just jam it because you're supposed to be able to change the actual ring on. And by changing it every time, it changes the background, has custom background in there, a whole bunch of different things going on. So that's what I'm trying to finish off the video on. It's an interesting watch. It's an RTOS mm-hmm. watch. It doesn't, or sorry, Hyper. It's a Xiaomi HyperOS yeah, watch.
RTOS.
Yeah. and it obviously supports battery life for days on end. But I will say that it's very obvious for me that it may not be necessarily the watch that I would wear all the time. I like the design. I like mm-hmm. the functionalities of it, the health tracking and all of that, much, much easier. It is lighter than most Wear OS watches that I've used in the past, although, again, lasts much longer. That for me, notifications are still a big, I need to be able to respond to my messages, man. This makes me gravitate back to the phone more so than I need to, which I feel like defeats the purpose. But as a fitness tracking device, it absolutely does the job as it's intended. And it looks great. And like I said, they have different designs. I got the silver one. And they gave me one extra ring there. And I know at CES, I saw a few, like there's a yellow one, there's a multicolor one, almost like one for every evening design that you want. So you can change the bands, you can change the ring. And by doing so, the entire look of the watch changes and it adapts to what you want. So it's an interesting approach. So hopefully that one will be before the weekend is over. So that'll be my goal for that video. I know you dropped something early today, but...
I was holding up this too because this is the new Motion, that's the older line of speakers. This is the new Boom 2, and I got a video out on it, and also our buddy Jeff. So, as much as I want everybody to go check out my video on the Boom 2, this is the little super bassy, it's a racetrack subwoofer with a couple tweeters attached to it and these giant like radiators that you can really hear. The cavernous thump on this little mini speaker. I always have to point people to Jeff's videos because I'm a mids guy. I'm a more mids please kind of audio representation guy. So if you really want to know if something is bass head approved, you can always turn to me for clarity, articulation, those kinds of conversations. Then you got to go to Jeff, who really knows what the F he's talking about when it comes to really rumbling the fillings out of your skull. But this thing has been a joy. I really do like what Soundcore has been doing across their entire audio line, but also making some of the best competitive like party speakers against like what JBL, because JBL's doing some of the best speakers the company has ever done. Mm-hmm. And now these two companies are kind of going head to head in a really interesting way. If you want to bump tunes at like a pool party, or do you want to outfit your home and have speakers that talk to each other really easily so you can quickly stream audio to multiple devices all at the same time. It's really interesting to think like how far the Bluetooth speaker has come, how we kind of thought the Bluetooth speaker was sort of passe, and now a couple companies are kind of clawing back. There's some other cool tech that we could be throwing into some of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I think I covered their, I want to say the X600 and X500. It's the speakers as well. They're not they're not the outdoorsy type. They're more the home Bluetooth speakers. But with spatial audio, that was, I think, that the big approach to those speakers in there. Ever since Soundcore first started to this day, I fell in love with the brand, with the audio experience, the tuning. It just feeds into the music that I listen to most of the time. And it's a very, very direct competitor to some of the other more expensive options that we see on the market. Their in-ear, over-the-ear speakers are also very competitive as well.
Just very interesting to talk about at the price point. Mm-hmm. So being the clarity audio nerd that I am, in my house, I am so much more likely to turn to that satellite speaker Sony. Mm-hmm. That Sony Bluetooth speaker, I keep using it. It's just really nice. but I'd never take it outside. I'd never pack it up. I'd never really take it on a road trip.
It's bigger, but it's also the because the fact that it has the pieces that separate, and
it's hard to travel with.
Yeah, it's hard to be. Yeah, they are not locked in. So they're there if you're just sitting it, but then the moment you kind of move a little bit, you can easily nudge it off. And you have to go out of your way to pack
the speaker and the satellites, but turning everything off because the satellites will auto turn on if you remove them from the base station. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. I really, really love what Sony did there in terms of incredible syncing technology to get surround sound audio working for a little personal bubble of your own music. But the second I want to go outside, I grab this big old chunky handle and I go out, and this thing is way too loud for my back patio to not piss off my neighbors. And it's the little speaker.
I think there's two versions.
I've got it over here. This is the older one. This is the Motion Boom Plus. Yes.
So I have both of those. I have the smaller one and I have the larger one on the older Motion Boom Plus.
I'm gonna do this here just because it's easier to hold up. So this is the Motion Boom Plus, and then this is the Boom 2.
Oh wow, way cheap. We're small.
The Motion Boom Plus. The Boom 2 has a bass expansion mode that takes total speaker output up to nearly the same level as the larger Boom Plus.
Okay.
So it gets about as loud, and I think it actually does a better job with clarity in sort of the middle volume range.
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be at present a direct replacement for the big speaker yet.
Okay.
This is taking over for the original Motion Boom, and it's just being called a Boom 2. So I guess they either are going to be ending one line, or they're going to be making a harder distinction between indoor and outdoor speakers. And the Motion line should be the indoor speaker. The Boom line should be the outdoor speaker. But it's kind of crazy. I mean, to hear this kind of wattage, it's an 80 watt total portable speaker system in a little lunchbox size is pretty remarkable. So if they can do a double racetrack sub for a Boom 2 Plus, and they can bump the wattage on that even more, I don't even know that I could use it. It's like, that is way too much speaker for anything that I would ever need in my general vicinity.
It would definitely be more of a beach party type of a.
You'd be pissing off everyone around you, and it's hilarious.
You'll have to invite everybody to the party, otherwise, it's like, yeah, you're pissing people off. You're like, what are you playing? Yeah. What kind of music is that? No, I'm with you.
That Boom 2, the little one, louder than what we need at our community pool. I took it out there. It was raining. Thankfully, no one was there because it was torrential downpour while I was shooting my video. But I turned it on. I'm at about 75%, and I can walk the entire. This is not like a little backyard pool or a person's personal pool. This is a community pool.
Yeah.
And I can hear it clearly around the entire pool. Like, if you were sitting next to it, you would be mad how loud it was.
Well, it would be too much too, depending on how loud you're playing. I think the overall preference here is group setting, group enjoyment of content with music. Obviously, as you said, you know, connectivity, the ability to play, you know, good music and good audio representation with the EQ. I'm assuming this one also supports app support.
Full support. SoundCore. This is another thing that they divide their lines on. I don't think any of their outdoor speakers have supported like LDAC or AptX.
No, that was the last generation we didn't. I think the X series that I got here does support the X isn't.
And I want to say one of the nicer indoor Motion speakers supports LDAC too. This is not an audiophile grade speaker. This is not the kind of speaker I would put up against, like, I've got, like, even my Benk with its somewhat semi-useless electrostatic panels has a detail and a clarity that is much better suited for listening in a small bedroom.
Okay.
I'm very pleased. The Boom 2 sounds good. It's again, it's like I'm really deep in the weeds to talk about, like, well, if you're listening to the strumming on a rhythm guitar for old 50s rock and roll, you're going to have difficulty hearing some of the nuance, blah, 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 character tone. But then you don't care because the whole reason it exists is to go the F outside and piss off your neighbors because it's so loud. So I don't think that's any great drawback that it doesn't have a higher bitrate audio codec support. That's not really what it's made for. And it's also not priced in a tier where you would expect it to compete against, like, the fancy Sonys. Mm-hmm. Three times more expensive than a Boom 2.
Yeah. So no. You start off with a statement by saying Sony's, and you continue the conversation. No.
There is still a Sony tax. Exactly.
There's absolutely. There's the tech behind it, the creation there, the satellite technology, the audio latency that they're able to achieve. All of those things are the Sony's are obviously very different and a very different consumer, I feel like, as well. The Sony's more for personal use, indoor, surround, that personal sound bubble.
Again, right tool for the right job.
Absolutely.
And in saying that, I have a video out on this. I'm just starting to repeat stuff from the video, but
the video came out about a couple of days ago. Make sure you check it out.
And you can check it out.
The channels will be in the description. Yeah.
Normally I would write this off more, but even though it doesn't have all of the fanciest audiophile gear, because of things like you just mentioned, having the ability to jump into the app and customize your own EQ, you can disable some of that ultra, ultra bass mode. You can automatically walk it back one button press on the speaker. Mm-hmm. You can quickly link it up to other speakers if you want your whole house to be playing the same audio. And I've done that upstairs, downstairs, and I've got Lex's playlist going, and we can hear all over the house. I just have to turn the volume way down because these speakers are so stupid loud. But even for being a rugged, floating, waterproof, outdoor bass-heavy speaker, it is still Soundcore. And I think Soundcore still does this well, where it's better behaved than you think it's going to be. You think it's going to be mega bass skull rumble, and that's just going to roll over everything because you want the big fat bass that gets fat and big and bass. Mm-hmm. If you take a little time to tune it, it's got a bit more room to handle those adjustments, and you can make it a better tamed indoor speaker if you want to. I still don't think it compares to more expensive purpose-built indoor speakers, but you've got the room to take it indoors, take it outdoors. It's not just this one thing for pool parties and campouts. It can do a little bit more. And I just took a call on it. I was wrapping up some other stuff and I was listening to some jazz and I had it on and Marie called me and it was a remarkably good speakerphone. It was across my office here. So it's only 8 feet away from me, but she heard me really well. So the mics were picking up surprisingly well in the whole like exchange of audio and stuff like that. So again, it's a bit more flexible than I was expecting, and I think that is always going to be one of the big perks. It's not super expensive, but it is a nicely built, premium-priced outdoor speaker, so it's nice that you can do a few other things with it, too.
So it sounds like a good recommendation for the summer, or maybe as we get closer into school year parties and going out and doing family events, this is definitely a good companion and speaker.
Absolutely what I would have added the weight to my pack when I was a Boy Scout. You know, like you want to go out for like a weekend or hike and camp. You know, this has enough battery life where you wouldn't even have to worry about topping it off. You know, you hike out, you're probably not going to be playing music on the hiking trail because we're not douchebags, we're Boy Scouts. You get to the campsite, you set it up, you've got music playing at like a moderate volume. You don't have to blast like the whole surrounding forest. This could easily go 3 days of intermittent use.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
Without ever having to top it back off. So, and then if you had another kid pack some solar panels, you could keep this thing running for weeks easily. Like, a problem. No, so it really does like fit that role impeccably well. I was just surprised that it's something I could see using beyond that one role And it had a little bit more room to do that too. So yeah, I've got the video out. You can catch that. And then in just keeping up with other audio nonsense, I just went outside today because it was the first day it hadn't been raining in like weeks that I could go outside. And I shot a little an editorial on Android phone audio quality for recording video. So if you're looking at phones to use as vlogging cameras and you've been playing around with other mics, one of the things that I think need to be doing a better job of keeping up with, and I'm a part of this issue too, is we talk about phone cameras and how great these phone cameras are, but so many of these amazing camera phones are going to wreck your video with terrible audio processing. Yeah. And it's maybe a thing I need to check in on more frequently and say, like, well, if you pair this with this microphone, it's actually going to sound really good. But if you take this phone and you hook it up to something, a really good audio source, it's still going to sound terrible. They're still going to destroy the audio for you. So I put out a little comparison, two of my absolute favorite camera phones over the last year. And when it comes to shooting video, one of the phones I can use, the other phone I can't at all use for this kind of walk and talk outdoor, just off the cuff, let me shoot a vlog. It does a terrible job of handling anything audio. And I know why they're doing it, but they've made a very terrible decision in how they do the audio noise reduction.
Audio is almost as important as video in most time, because if your video even is remotely grainy or whatever, you always have the audio to fall back on. At least the message is not being lost. But no, you're right.
I feel like, and especially, I always put these things up as like they're the right tools to maybe shoot a little family video. Mm-hmm. You do like a montage of a vacation or like a theme park visit. Our phones are so capable. The other thing that's mission critical, though, I think a lot of reporters could be leaning on their phones for coverage more. And we're also seeing in like student-led newsrooms in like high schools and colleges, they're learning how to tackle news stories mobile first. So it kind of matters. Like, that's a reason why you might want a kid on a Sony instead of on a Samsung, right? Mm-hmm. The capabilities, the feature set, all those things that we talk about, we sort of like wax philosophical. I think mobile journalism really shines a harsh light on where one of these phones in the video that I did today, I think would fit in really well. You'd be able to blend that footage directly into a more traditional news broadcast. You could use it to podcast with. You could do a lot of things with it. The other phone, I actually like the cameras a little bit better, but I can't use any of the footage unless I've been doing off-camera audio recording. It is fundamentally unusable. So even if I had really terrible video in like a news situation or in a family situation, mm-hmm. if I had terrible video but with really good audio, you'd still watch that video. You'd still have a pretty good time. If I have amazing video but I have terrible audio, you're not going to stick around. You're going to leave. And so with those two phones side by side, even though I like the cameras on one of the phones better than the other, can't use that footage.
No,
I'm screwed.
You're absolutely right. And I think I always love some of the options as well with some devices that know they're not doing necessarily the best audio experience. If they at least allow you to leverage that by having like USB audio options, connecting external mics and or using.
But that's the big problem is a lot of these. So what I'm demonstrating is not the microphones on the phones. I am taking a wireless receiver, a USB audio wireless receiver. I can't talk about the mics yet because they technically don't exist. But I'm plugging in a much higher quality USB audio source, and I'm using the exact same solution with both phones. And those two phones are doing significantly different things.
I see what you mean.
Processing the audio into that video. Think about how frustrating that would be. You go from an LG V50, which was still one of the all-time best audio processing devices in mobile computing that I've ever used. And then you go to an LG V60, which was one of the worst for this heavy-handed noise reduction, filtering, automatic gain control. And you're like, what happened? I'm using the same mics, I'm using the same setup, I'm using the same audio gear, and now my audio sounds like garbage. I can't use any of the video from this phone like I could on the supposedly less good year-old device.
Yeah.
Same thing here. I've got an Ultra and a Pro. These are the top-tier camera devices. You can plug mics into them. The phones know what to do, handle all of this audio. This is amazing. But one of those phones is going to destroy your audio, and the other phone is going to sound really good. And that might make someone's purchasing decision if you're wanting to do more than just scan TikTok on your phone. You could do something with your phone. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy nice mics, you would want to know, is the phone going to work with these nice mics, or is it going to sound like garbage?
That's the other thing. Yeah, not every company puts in the correct tools or supports the audio input. Like on OPPO devices, you actually have to turn off a function for the audio input to work over USB-C because it has its own functional options for audio processing and audio mm-hmm. improvement that it circumvents external audio. So it disables it. But no, don't get me wrong. I think you're right. It is absolutely audio is as important, if not more important than video in some areas, because even the worst looking video are livable if people can understand what the message is or what's going on.
Yeah,
it's a comprehension. We hear things more than we see things in generally in life. We actually, our attention gets caught more with sound if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, and then also it just sounds harsh. No. It sounds alien. It sounds, if you hit video with way too much noise reduction, you start getting that digital distortion.
The warping, tunneling.
That underwater warbling digital sound.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not tunneling. It's so you're underwater talking. That's how it sounds.
Yeah, you've been tunneled. I even turned that into a verb. But no, it's so distracting, you won't pay attention to what the person is saying, and it destroys the dynamic range of the human voice. So then if you get a little spiky or expressive, or your pitch modulates, it sounds harsh and tinny and distorted, and you get peaky. And that actually happened in one of my clips, where at the very beginning of the video, the phone and the mics are like peaking me. So you can hear that kind of really harsh digital distortion on some of hard consonants and stuff. But the whole rest of the video is kind of showcasing, I'm not changing anything. I'm literally just pulling the receiver off of one phone, plugging it into the other. And boy, does this sound great on one and terrible on the other. And I really just need any company that says they care about the camera to reconsider how this is working with the audio, because they made a choice that is the correct choice for auto mode. Do all of the auto processing in your auto video mode. But if I spend $1,400 on a phone with really great manual camera controls, maybe let me manually control my audio too.
Don't leave the audio mode, although you're giving me. No, I got it. We'll have to see. We'll see how the new series. I think that phone video that you're talking about, I think just dropped a few hours ago today. So this is fresh.
Oh yeah, I put it up this afternoon. Fresh on the channel.
Yeah. So it's I think your second or third video this week or something like that. Are you working on something else for the rest of the weekend, or is it?
I'm trying to wrap up this tank because technically the embargo lifted on Monday, and we had a lot of stuff going on. It's weird because Unihertz sells very unconventionally and it's available to purchase, but the only place I can find, it's not even on the Unihertz website that I can find. It's only on a Unihertz AliExpress page. Okay. So I believe it is available. Big air quotes asterisk on that. It's available. So I'm going to try and get the rest of the video finished up for tomorrow afternoon. I'm not going to play any precious games with this is a Patreon early access. It's a tank. I just need to get the video out and be done with it because it's such a weird appliance and it is such a singular of its kind. I know we love watching nostalgic videos when phones were wacky and weird. But then when real wacky, weird phones show up today, we're like, oh, no, that's no one's going to buy that. And I guess, but it's weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like we're gonna remember
it appeals fondly. To
yeah. But it's like finding who it's the right fit for, to me, is a very particular challenge. And I feel like a lot of old phones that we get really nostalgic about, for their time, we were quick to dismiss, well, they're different. Not a lot of people are going to want something different. That's a big fail. And then years later, we're like, oh, but phones are boring. Don't you miss when we had really wacky and weird designs? And this, to me, is kind of like of that. Remember, we had the Galaxy Active series, a really weird, chunky, ruggedized Galaxy S series phone. And it was powerful. Often the cameras were like a generation behind the regular non-ruggedized phones, but they were still great. And then everybody kind of walked away from that as an option. And now you look back on it, oh, remember when we had those wacky, rugged Samsung Actives and the Kyoceras with the sapphire glass crystal screens? And do you remember we had that Casio Gazone? I don't even know what that was supposed to be.
Oh, I remember that one. Okay.
Right, but we start thinking like, oh, well, yeah, there were all these times where it would have been fun to kind of play with those things. And then something like this comes around and you're like, it's going to get written off. And a lot of people are going to kind of shrug it off and like, oh, it's a unihertz, mur. And then like years later, we're going to be like, hey, you remember we were playing with all those weird phones that had like massive battery power banks built into them and crazy
24,000, man. 24,000.
Yeah.
That's like the iPhone battery times 7,000 or something.
It came half charged. It took me days to drain it. The recharge was over 2 hours, and now I'm back into it taking days to whittle down.
Running. You are running like literally almost five times the battery size of a normal phone. That would take you about a day and a half. So it's designed for that long trip and you know, again, built in with so many tools in there just to kind of get things running in there. But no, I'm excited. I'll look forward to seeing that video come out.
I'll try and get it out tomorrow. I don't know. It might be a weekender.
For me, for sure. Yeah,
it's silly.
My watch video is definitely going to be either a Saturday or a Sunday video. I need to spend some time finishing up some content on it. But I've been using it basically sleeping, using it, and it's from a functional standpoint. The watch itself is refreshing to see the design choices that they did here. It's very much a long battery life fitness tracker that looks like a watch and has a lot of interesting, unique designs that you can make it custom to fit your needs. And I think that's the biggest thing about it. I feel like that makes it more. Xiaomi did release an S2. Unfortunately, I didn't get that watch. And so hopefully we'll see. I still like Wear OS, or at least what OnePlus is doing with Wear OS, at least right now with the Watch 2, for sure. So, definitely as soon as I'm done with the video, I'm just going to go back to the Watch 2. I miss Wear, and I wish 4 solid days of usage on that one as well. So pretty good. Yeah.
It's so good.
Of course, if you guys haven't got a chance to, make sure to check out the audio podcast. It'll be coming out in the next day or so. And of course, catch our buddy Juan on Monday with the SGG QA on his podcast at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, where he gets a chance to cover some of the tech and, recapping and talking about current events and so on. And he's going to let us know on Monday if TikTok's going to get banned or not, because apparently things are going in that direction for some reason.
Oh, there's like a lot of other just depressing news. So we're going to try and keep the show light. But it's getting dark out there, guys.
Did not want to mention that at the beginning. But I really want to say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us. Aditya, Michael Peppertech, Tech for Your Needs, everybody kicking it was Farhan with us as well. On this beautiful Thursday. And again, for two old guys that totally forgotten, literally within minutes of missing the entire thing.
Yeah.
On a comment from my wife, which I want to say.
We put the show together in like 10 minutes.
It was literally there. We'll see you guys next week. Be safe. Stay safe. And hope you guys get to enjoy your tech. Have fun with it.
Have fun.
Take care, everybody.
Bang.